Chapter 60. "Leave it to Dirk Pitt to pick up a dame in the middle of the ocean during a hurricane," Sandecker said. "What's your secret?"
"The Pitt curse," Pitt answered, as he tenderly bandaged the swelling on Dana's head. "Women are forever attracted to me under impossible circumstances when I'm in no mood to respond."
Dana began to moan softly. "She's coming around," Gunn said. He was on his knees next to a cot they had wedged between the gymnasium's old exercise equipment to steady it from the ship's rolling and pitching. Pitt covered her with a blanket. She suffered a nasty tap, but her mass of hair probably saved her from anything worse than a concussion. "How did she come to be on Sturgis's helicopter?" Woodson asked. "I thought she was babysitting the news people on board the Alhambra."
"She was," Admiral Sandecker said. "Several television network correspondents requested permission to cover the Titanic's haul to New York from aboard the Capricorn. I gave authorization on the condition that Dana accompany them."
"I ferried them over," Sturgis said, "and I saw Mrs. Seagram disembark when I landed on the Capricorn. It's a mystery to me how she re-entered the helicopter without being noticed."
"Yeah, a mystery," Woodson repeated caustically. "Don't you bother checking your cargo compartment between flights?"
"I'm not running a commercial airline," Sturgis snapped back. He looked as though he was about to hit Woodson.
He glanced at Pitt and was met with a disapproving stare. Then, with a visible effort, he reined in his emotions and spoke slowly and firmly. "I've been flying that bird out there steady for 20 hours straight. I was tired. I easily convinced myself that there was no need to bother with a cargo compartment check, because I was certain it was empty. How was I to know Dana Seagram would sneak on board?"
Gunn shook his head. "Why did she do it? Why would she?"
"I don't know why. How the hell should I?" Sturgis said. "Suppose you tell me why she threw a hammer through my rotor blades, wrapped herself up in a tarpaulin, and then clouted herself on the head, not necessarily in that order."
"Why don't you ask her?" Pitt said. He nodded down at the cot.
Dana was staring up at the men, her eyes devoid of understanding. She looked as though she had just been dragged up from the sanctuary of exhausted sleep.
"Forgive me for asking such a hackneyed question," she murmured, "but where am I?"
"My dear girl," Sandecker said, kneeling at her side, "you're on the Titanic."
She looked dazedly at the Admiral, disbelief written across her face.
"That can't be."
"Oh, I assure you it is," Sandecker said. "Pitt, there's a bit of scotch left. Bring me a glass."
Pitt obediently did as he was told and handed Sandecker the glass. Dana took a swallow of the Cutty Sark, choked on it, and coughed, holding her head as if to contain the pain that had suddenly exploded in her skull.
"There, there, my dear."
It was plain to see Sandecker was somewhat at a loss as to how to treat a woman in agony.
"Rest easy. You've suffered a nasty blow on the head."
Dana felt the bandage circling her hair, and then clutched the Admiral's hand, knocking the glass on the deck. Pitt winced as the scotch spilled. Women just don't appreciate good booze.
"No, no, I'm all right."
She struggled to a sitting position on the cot and stared in wonder at the strange mechanical contrivances.
"The Titanic?"
She said the name reverently.
"I'm actually on the Titanic?"
"Yes." Pitt's voice was edged with sharpness. "And we'd like to know how you got here." She looked at him, half uncertainly, half confused, and said,
"I don't know. I honestly don't know. The last thing I recall, I was on the Capricorn."
"We found you in the helicopter," Pitt said.
"The helicopter? I lost my makeup kit. Must have dropped it on the flight from the Alhambra."
She forced a wan smile.
"Yes, that's it. I returned to the helicopter to search for my makeup kit. I found it, jammed between the fold-up seats. I tried pulling it free when... well, I guess I fainted and hit my head when I fell."
"Fainted? You're sure you..." Pitt broke off his question and asked another instead.
What was the very last thing you remember seeing before you blacked out?
She thought a moment, staring as if at some distant vision in time. Those coffee-brown eyes seemed unnaturally large against her pale and strained face.
Sandecker patted her hand paternally. Just take your time.
Finally, her lips formed a word.
Boots.
Say again, Pitt ordered.
A pair of boots,
she answered, as if seeing a revelation.
Yes, I remember now. A pair of sharp-toed cowboy boots.
Cowboy boots?
Gunn asked, his expression blank.
Dana nodded.
You see, I was down on my hands and knees trying to extricate my makeup kit, and then, I don't know, they just seemed to be there.
She paused.
What color were they?
Pitt prodded her.
Kind of a yellow cream color.
Did you see the man's face?
She started to shake her head and caught herself at the first stab of pain.
No, everything went dark then. That's all there is.
Her voice trailed off. Pitt could see that there was nothing to be gained by further interrogation. He looked down at Dana and smiled. She looked up and smiled back with an anxious-to-please smile.
We dirty old men had best leave you alone to rest for a while, he said. If you need anything, one of us will always be close by.
Sandecker followed Pitt over to the entrance to the grand staircase.
What do you make of it? Sandecker asked. Why would anyone want to harm Dana?
For the same reason they killed Henry Monk?
You think she got wise to one of the Soviet agents?
More likely in her case, it was a matter of being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
The last thing we need on our hands now is an injured woman, Sandecker sighed. There'll be hell to pay when Gene Seagram gets my radio message about what happened to his wife.
With all due respect, sir, I told Gunn not to send your message. We can't risk a change in plans at the last minute. Men make cautious decisions where women are concerned. We won't hesitate to risk the lives of a dozen members of our own sex, but we'll balk every time when it comes to endangering one of the female species. What Seagram, the President, Admiral Kemper, and the others in Washington don't know won't hurt him, at least for the next 12 hours.
It would appear my authority means nothing around here, Sandecker said acidly. Anything else you neglected to tell me, Pitt? Like who those outlandish cowboy boots belong to?
The boots belong to Ben Drummer.
I've never seen him wear them. How could you know that?
I discovered them when I searched his quarters on the Capricorn.
Now you've added burglarizing to your other talents, Sandecker said.
Drummer wasn't alone. Giordino and I have searched every one of the salvage crew's belongings over the past month.
Find anything of interest?
Nothing incriminating.
Who do you think injured Dana?
It wasn't Drummer. That much is certain. He's got at least a dozen witnesses, including you and me, Admiral, who will testify that he's been on board the Titanic since yesterday. It would have been impossible for him to attack Dana Seagram on a ship that was 50 miles away. At that moment, Woodson came up and caught Pitt's arm.
Sorry for the interruption, boss, but we just received an urgent call from the Juno. I'm afraid it's bad news.
Let's have it, Sandecker said wearily. The outlook can't possibly be painted any blacker than it is now.
Oh, but it can, Woodson said.
The message is from the missile cruiser's captain, and it reads, Have received distress call from eastbound freighter Laguna Star, bearing 05 degrees, 110 miles north of your position. Must respond. Repeat, must respond. Sorry to leave you. Good luck to the Titanic.
Good luck to the Titanic, Sandecker echoed. His voice was flat and empty of life. We might as well raise a flashing sign on the hull that says, Welcome, thieves and pirates. Come one, come all.
So now it begins, Pitt thought to himself. But the only sensation that coursed through his body was a sudden, overwhelming urge to go to the bathroom.